Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Ex-Premier Desert Island Discs. And I'm very pleased to say that this week we've got our first overseas from Britain person on the programme. And it's Paddy, who I'm sure people know from Forum 8. And, well, hello, Paddy. And maybe if you could give us just a little bit of background about where you grew up and what your life was like.
Righto. Well, I was born in Switzerland, came to Australia as a very baby, grew up 5 minutes walk from the beach in a lovely rural suburb, had a difficult relationship with my mother, but apart from that, was a cheerful young fella, shy. In my teenage years, I basically began to live at the beach, surfing all the time, and it was a lot of fun. But there was always this existential angst from the time I was a young teenager, maybe 11 or 12 even. I was obsessed with the meaning of life and religion. And that's about all I have to say. You know, that's the background. Actually, I lived through that. Didn't come to knowledge, as we used to call it then, until 1973, by which time I was a married man, two children, and self-employed. And on the one level, was doing great. On the other level, though, still hadn't got rid of that that angst, which is probably why I ended up in Divine Light Mission.
It's probably why we all ended up in Divine Light Mission, I would think. And that's probably a good intro to your first track, which is Van Morrison's Into the Mystic.
Yeah, well, as I said in the stuff I sent you, this is like... When you're obsessed with religion and the meaning of life, you've got both sides of the coin. You've got the dreams, the hopes, the aspirations, and the joy. And that's what this song sort of describes, you know, the mystery.
Hi, Hamzin. I'm afraid I can't possibly remember most of the songs that I've loved in my life, but there was that period back in the 70s when I was involved in Divine Light Mission. And I think I can make a go of giving a bit of a history of that time for myself through song. To start off with, here's a song, a commercial song, written by a man who turned into a terrible old curmudgeon of disappointed spiritual dreams, but he certainly had a way with music and words, and here he manages to describe what I'd call the very positive part of being a mystical, romantic, yearning, young adult.
Born before the wind, also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic. Hark, now hear the sailors cry. Smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic. And where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have to fear that I wanna rock your gypsy soul. Just like way back in the days of old. Yeah, magnificently we will fold into the best day. Thank you.
when that foghorn blows. You know I will be coming home. And when that foghorn whistle blows, I gotta hear it. I don't help but feel it. We were fooled into the mystic.
Absolutely lovely song that is, and
too late to stop now.
Yeah, indeed, too late to stop now. I think this is going to be one of the things about the Desert Island Disc that I'm going to really enjoy. It's just already bringing up tracks that are semi-buried and forgotten about, and I used to love him during that period. And obviously quite important for you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we all look for music that resonates, you know, with our soul, our wishes, our hopes, you know, the things we don't understand. And obviously a song like that, I wasn't the only one. I can remember meeting this American Premier girl who, when I first played that song, she just went out of her mind. She'd actually thought it was called Into the Misty. But
Into
she'd
the
loved
Misty?
It. Into the Misty, yeah.
Right, okay. Right. And maybe leads rather, having already listened to the tracks that you've chosen, leads rather on to, I'll play the little bit of description that you've given, just for those people who don't realise, when Paddy sent me over the tracks, he also did a little bit of recorded speech around them, so we're going to be juggling up part of this conversation with stuff that he's already recorded. So I think maybe we'll just go on to that little bit of intro that you've spoken for the next one.
Now, the words don't make a lot of sense, but the song certainly does. As they really takes you back into those times when you thought anything was possible and everything was going to happen. But there's another side to that story, and that's that you're often alone, uncertain, you don't know how to go on. The spiritual path is very difficult. And it's not like you're surrounded in the suburbs by other people who are feeling exactly the same as you do. And this song here, I'm reasonably sure I heard it the first night I ever went to Satsang. And it would have been sung by a guy called Joe Creighton, who's been a very successful musician here in Australia, as you can tell by looking at his www.joecreighton.com. Even though I've never actually forgiven him, because when I brought my 700 LPs into Divine Sales, he went through them like a rat going up a drainpipe, whipped off all my Van Morrison LPs, and anything else that had class, and away he went. But I thought I was giving it to save the world. Anyway, here's the next song.
Boy, if I ever needed someone, I need you. Lord, if I ever needed someone, I need you. See me through the day. Someone I need you, Lord, if I ever needed someone.
sorrow to lead me on to givingness, so I can see a new tomorrow. Lord, if I ever needed someone, I need you. Lord,
just describe how that was starting to affect you at the time and how you felt about just life and everything in general.
Well, first of all, you got to understand, when I came to knowledge, I was happy, I was feeling okay. But, you know, come at late at night, or come the dusk at the beach, you feel that emptiness. I can't actually explain why I was taken to my first knowledge session purely from curiosity. I couldn't believe that this friend of mine was absolutely involved with this stupidity, this madness. Divine Light Mission was a very low grade cult. Its Hinduism was you know, not exactly what you'd call you know, the Brahmins considered Hans Sri Hans to be a nobody. But there's your real self. You know, we're 99% emotion, and for whatever reason, when I sat there on the floor, though I thought all sorts of negative and contradictory thoughts about a lot of the quite stupid, otherwise quite uplifting things I heard, it moved me so much that I ended up going back again and again and again, despite what I might think. You know, I was young, I was naive, I wasn't aware of the extent that group consciousness can affect you, and the extent of emotional upliftness that you can get from other people.
Right.
I assumed it was, you know, some grace involved through God. These days, right. I don't accept that anymore, of course.
Right. Okay. Now,
is that any sort of answer?
Oh, indeed it is, and it's a description of a process that I think probably a lot of people will relate to. I mean, I certainly didn't go through it in terms of so much in terms of a group uplift, but I did have one or two people who I spent 9 months to a year really arguing with them that they were just being completely stupid. But I went through exactly the same process, that during the conversations that I had with them, I became more and more convinced from the energy and the feeling that was coming off from them that they actually might have contacted something. And then, of course, that starts playing on your own vulnerabilities, your own doubts, your own uncertainty at that age, and especially if you're coming from a slightly more sensitive end of the society that you're in. I think you're much more open to that kind of, I don't know how you would describe it, just, well, picking up an uplift from people around you.
Yeah, and also, you know, like, it works on different levels, because, you know, there weren't many premies that I in those days when I first went, that I actually felt at all comfortable with on a personal level. They were younger, they were still sort of half hippie, and I wasn't, it was purely internal emotions in myself, you know, but I just wasn't aware of what was creating it. You know, you could walk into satsang and just crest straight off. If the room was intense enough, the satsang was powerful enough, you could walk in off the floor, so to speak, off the road, off the street, and bang, you were straight there in this very concentrated, very intense space, which for whatever reason I just loved. Mm. Ah, dear me.
Yeah, I know. Do you sometimes feel that it's a little bit hard to believe when you're looking back?
Well, you've got to understand, it was a very long time ago for me, and yep. I've been out of it for like 25 years.
Right.
You know, I usually just look at it with sort of a slightly ironic joy. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was great fun. What am I going to do, you know?
Yeah.
Whip myself because I was silly and young. And as a matter of fact, it taught me an awful, awful lot. You know, I think I'm a very, very rational person, a very, very intellectual person. So for me, you know, where most people are like 1% rationality and 99% emotion, I'm like 2% rationality and 98% emotion. And living through that decade in Divine Light Mission allowed me to experience the fact that, you know, emotions can be so strong, experiences can be so overwhelming. And I began to appreciate, you know, the unimportance of rationality in life.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, let's go on to the next bit of chat that you did before your next track.
Of course, once you actually joined Divine Light Mission, you never had to be alone again. Not that even in the early days I ever even talked to anybody but my wife, but you're always surrounded cheek to jowl, sitting on the floor, listening to other people speak. It was quite a strange organisation to join. It was a little hard at first to figure out exactly what was going on. There were different people with different agendas, and the group as a whole appeared to have not necessarily conflicting ideals, hopes and dreams, but ones that didn't necessarily go together all that well. And some that I didn't have any, what would be the word, any sympathy for whatsoever. Especially, they were a very millennial group at that time. They really believed they were going to change the world and save the world, and that Miraji was like the Lord incarnate. I really was just interested in experiencing God through meditation, and they were the only people that were saying that it actually could be done here and now. Oops, sorry, not really here and now. You have to wait 30 days and come back, and then you can see it. So righto, I thought I'd give it a try. This next song really expresses the initial, early, unsophisticated worship and adoration of Prem Rawat that was prevalent in the early days, and only became even more so as time went on. Overtly, right out in front, I don't know what it's called, I actually call it the Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo song because of the bass line and because it's a bit of a tip to Miraji's sense of humour, one I always found rather unpleasant. Anyway, here's a song, I think it's by the Anand Band. Thank you.
Funny enough, so they're the one band from that period, but I've still got some affection for, and in spite of not feeling comfortable with what they're singing about, the vibe's got that, still got a sort of leftover of that 60s psychedelic vibe about them, which I really like, so
that's sure
my
do.
Angle. Yeah, no, very yep. much so. So, I mean, you've started off, with, I mean, we've gone pretty much into to Premier songs, fairly much straight off the second track, and Van Morrison. Does this mean that the earlier years music wasn't so important for you, or were you just choosing the tracks more because it's sort of ex-Premier Desert Island Discs?
Well, yeah, I chose the tracks purely because of ex-Premier Desert Island Discs,
right.
And there's no way on earth I could fit, you know, the music of my life into an hour or so.
Right.
And then also it's, you know, I've actually thought about it a little bit because of your input, you know, all the music that really means the most to me in a sense came out of, you know, 65 to 67, 68, because that's when I was a teenager, you know, and that's when these things mean a lot to you.
Right.
In the years since I left, you know, DLM or EV, I still love music, but as you get older, it doesn't have the same effect and impact upon you. And, you know, it's a lovely, lovely thing. But I can't pretend that it has a deep emotional resonance for me in the way it did when I was a teenager.
Right, okay. I mean, just although we're not playing any of the tracks from when you were a teenager, what kind of stuff did you really enjoy listening to as a teenager?
Right, if I was to do the sort of, you know, 10 best sort of disc sort of stuff, I'd go Forever Changes by Love, you know, Astral Reeks by Van Morrison. Another Side of Bob Dylan and Bring It All Back Home by Bob Dylan, With a Little Help from My Friends from Joe Cocker, What's Been Did and What's Been Hid by Donovan, Disraeli Gears by Fresh Cream, and there's probably some other, you know, psychedelic rock from that era that I, Quicksilver Messenger Service, Spooky Tooth, you know, the sort of things that young teenage boys are into.
No, young psychedelic teenage boys.
Oh.
I actually knew a few people in the 60s who weren't into that stuff. I must admit there weren't many of them that I knew, but there were a few.
Well, that's another thing, of course, because these days everyone was a hippie, right? But what a load of crap. I mean, hey, I got beaten up a few times by football teams of boys my own age.
Yeah, indeed.
Surf boat rowing team, you know, they nearly beat the crap out of me because I had long hair and was wearing a robe in the street I was brought up in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're all hippies now, but hey, it wasn't like that back then.
No. And, well, let's go on to, again, a little bit of chat that you've got before the next track. Oh, by the way, if anybody, I might find this out later, but if anybody knows the tracks that we don't have names for, like that last one by the Anam Band, if they could let us know, it would be useful just for pure getting the information correct.
Yeah, hey, I'd love to know, and I'd love to have all the old music.
Right, so let's go on to the next track, which is, and I can't remember here if there is a little bit of chat beforehand, but it is actually Blue Aquarius and God Is Love.
The music in That Sang Every Night in Sydney, Australia was fantastic. It was a band, pretty good musicians, great singers, a wonderful ladies' chorus, and that was the nucleus of what later became One Foundation for many, many years, which was, you know, Meraji's premier recording and performing band. And but I'd say that basically the major songs that were being played then were by a group called Blue Aquarius, and Jeff Bridford, the songwriter for them, actually became a member of One Foundation later on. But to me, the song that encapsulates, my favourite song of that time would have been At the Feet of the Master. But the song that, to me, encapsulates those early days in DLM was this one here called God Is Love, I think.
God is love, and God is truth, and truth is peace.
really
yeah, actually,
one.
That there's a line in there. Can you say that you've really been trying? And I think, you know, somewhere along the process of you know, deciding to receive knowledge, become a premier, there, you know, always is that thought, well, yeah, what have I been doing? These people, as you say, are they enthusiastic? They're saying they're experiencing deep joy and bliss, and do I have that happening in my life in the same sort of way? There's a time when, not necessarily a specific moment, when you are no longer looking at them, you're looking out as one of them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, you've crossed over that marker line.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was weird, on a completely different tack, I just thought of somebody while I was listening to that track that I haven't thought of. I didn't know him for very long. It was I think he was German, and I think he was a cellist called Rainer, who, don't know his surname, who I think played with Biology's band, and a lot of sadness, because about 2-3 years after that he committed suicide. I can't blame it on the cult stuff. I don't know the background, I don't know anything. It just brought up a lot of emotions for me, just remembering back to him. He was a beautiful guy.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of beautiful people in Divine Light Mission, and there still are, for that matter.
Indeed.
You know, it's not attracting scumbags, you know, people who want to be involved in violence and, you know, the denigration and the use of other people do not join, you know, spiritual religious cults.
No, they tend to lead them, but that's probably my cynicism showing there, I think, Paddy, don't you?
Oh, yeah, but hey, listen, there's one thing we must remember. Most people who become charismatic religious leaders, charismatic spiritual cult leaders, have to work very hard to do that. They have to have enormous charisma and talents in certain directions and influence of people and tremendous internal strength. Premarawat inherited his divine leadership, which is one of the reasons he's so fascinating. It's so interesting to see how, well, in many ways he's bungled it so badly. But on the other hand, unlike many of, say, of the 60s cult leaders, gurus, he hasn't committed the terrible sins and shocking evil that others have done, because he's just sort of a normal, ordinary sort of guy in a lot of ways.
Do you not think, I mean, I've got kind of half thought out theories on that, but I remember...
Well, so are mine.
When he used to get interviewed by the press, early 70s, I can remember still his reaction when he was getting ripped, and I just don't think he can deal with bad publicity in mainstream media, and I think that fear of that has actually, in a paradoxical way, has actually been beneficial to Premier's, in terms of it could have been a lot worse if he didn't have, if he hadn't have had that.
I mean, well, certainly he, you know, he couldn't cope with people face to face, you know, telling him what it was like, you know, what he was like.
Yeah.
And the very few couple of times that I've seen anything of that nature on TV or movie, his handlers quickly cut the, you know,
indeed,
cut the press conference there and then, ushered him out and refused to go on with it. I don't know. I don't have enough evidence.
No, well, I mean, and it's all disputable, because we're all reading between the lines anyway, because without actually spending time with a person, any person, it's, and even then you can't be absolutely certain, but you can maybe get a better handle. I would think the only people who really have a clue where it's coming from are the people who've spent time around him on a serious level.
Sure, but those are the very sort of people who are only allowed to spend time around him on a serious level, because they're not preconceived, you know, they are preconceived, they're not open to looking at him very closely, and those who, you know, show any signs of independent thought and decision making are sent packing. You know, I mean, what a group of yes men he's had around him all these years, and yes ladies.
Yeah, indeed, and the ones who finally turned were out quite fast usually as well, either from their own choice because they knew there was no point, or much more likely he got them out very fast.
Yeah. Who can blame him?
No, no.
You know?
Well, yeah, business is business, isn't it?
Yeah, He's done very well for himself. He's destroyed the family franchise, but it'll last long enough to keep providing him with the luxuries, the technological toys that he so obviously wants. You know?
Well, indeed, and I do remember a period about 3 or 4 years ago where people were trying to work out the figures of just how much he'd burnt through, and it was scary, the millions of dollars that he had burnt through that had not...
Yeah, I shouldn't have interrupted, but what's surprising to me is how much money can be generated by so few people.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
It's not as if he's had millions of followers. I mean, he might have millions of followers in India, but they're not in a position to provide him with all that much capital.
No.
At his peak, he never had more than 20,000 dedicated followers, and it must be down to about 10 now in the West, people who are able to provide a steady income for him. And, that's an awful lot of money that he spent. I suppose he had a lot of free labour. That can't go straight.
He had a lot of free labour, which definitely helped a lot, really, I think. I'm thinking of Decca and the plane building some of the horrific stories that have come out on the forum about that period. I mean, it was slave driving them 24/7 to serious ill health a lot of the time for absolutely zilch cost.
Yeah, well, I had a couple of friends who worked on that project, though they don't talk about it in that way. But I had another mate who worked on the mansion. Now, he told me that, there was a significant house there already over there at Malibu. So what they did is they built another house completely around it. And then when that house was built, they demolished the one in the middle. You know what I mean? So he always had had a big house. They completely surrounded it with another big house on all four sides, demolished the one in the middle, and then, built it up through the center again, I'm not quite sure how much of that is apocryphal and how much is my bad memory, but he certainly was there, and he like all premiers, he used to enjoy talking about it.
Indeed, but it certainly fits from the info that I've picked up over time. That would be classic, really. Well, instead of going on, let's head on to the next bit, which is you've got this down as Jeff Bridgeford, and who is Guru Maharaj?
Have it as Jeff Bridgeford. I don't know who sings this song.
Oh, right, okay.
And maybe anyone would tell me.
Yeah, indeed, if we can get some clarification on that, because I think, well, certainly it's so long for me now that, I mean, I can remember the Anand band Blue Aquarius. After that, it all starts getting a bit fuzzy in terms of the music and who did what and names and stuff. So let's go on to that and have a listen to that one.
I think as I sort of talk about those days, it's going to come out sounding like I was shockingly uncomfortable and embarrassed most of the time, because most of the time you just go to satsang, you sit there, you meditate morning and evening, and you work, and that's about all you have time for. But there was an awful lot about the early days that I did find embarrassing, mainly to do with the fact that the guru was a fat, pudgy little kid who just seemed to be interested in all the sorts of toys that pretty well all his followers had given up. And to join the organisation and to find God, turn the world on to love, peace, and joy, and all the rest of it. And this song, I mean, I think a lot of people would pour scorn on this song, but I actually think that the writer deserves a bloody Emmy Award. Hell, imagine someone coming up to you and saying, listen, we want you to write a song about, it's called Who is Guru Maharaj? And, the guy actually sounds like a very sophisticated musician, and I'm sure he must have gone on to a successful career in music in one form or another. And he deserves kudos for managing to turn this very inappropriate source material into a song.
Who is the artist of creation? That's the question you must ask till you know the answer. What is the purpose of your living? What is the meaning of your breath and death? Is it to serve? Why do we deserve this precious human body? Since history began, we have killed our fellow man. Has there ever been a time of peace? Can he make this sickness cease? Who is Guru Maharaj? What is a master of perfection? That's the question you must ask. Ask till you know the answer. What keeps the universe in motion? Can problems be solved by devotion? Is there truly a master plan? Can this planet be saved by? Watch who'll be feeding all the people. Watch who will wash away the tears. Watch the fruit of his knowledge.
Question you must ask.